Hello, I'm Simon Lambert, the editor of This Is Money, and this podcast is the fourth in the Making the Money Work series, sponsored by FSCS. On these shows, I join host Andy Peters and a fascinating range of guests with unconventional lives and finances to find out how they make their money work. The episodes will be arriving in your usual This Is Money podcast feed over the coming weeks. We hope you enjoy listening to them and learning about some lives less ordinary. This week, we speak to podcasters and comedians Tessa Coates and Stevie Martin.
This podcast is brought to you in association with the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. Check your financial products are FSCS protected. Visit fscs.org.uk/thisismoney to find out more. Hello and welcome back to Making the Money Work. Now, this podcast is going to be interesting because it's a podcast talking to podcasters. So today we're kind of shining a mirror on ourselves. Whilst most of us find solace in having a daily routine and a consistent payday, there are professions like vlogging, comedy, and even podcasting that are built on far less financial certainty. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
In today's gig economy, many of us seek to behave more and more like brands and businesses than just to deliver on a job description. I'm CEO of Andy Peters Limited.
I'm CEO of Tessa Coates Enterprises.
You say nothing. Say nothing, Stevie.
Hello.
How do we plan for a financial healthy future whilst living our career out day to day? Well, here to give us invaluable answers to these burning financial questions is our trusted and very lovely financial expert, Simon Lambert.
That is very lovely of you to say.
Thank you. I'm a lovely man. You've got a one-word title, haven't you? Editor of This Is Money.
Yep. That's simple. Yeah, editor. That's just my job title.
No side hustle?
No, I don't.
Perfect.
No.
I've never heard of that phrase, side hustle, but one of my mates, Steve, he always talks about his side hustle. So he has his full-time job and his side hustle.
Well, I think it's a very generational thing because I think our sort of year group graduated into a job market that didn't exist anymore. Too many people had a degree and they were completely worthless and there were no jobs, really. And so I think if we'd all gone straight into a decent job, we wouldn't now be in this sort of side hustle-y, you know.
When I interviewed Richard Branson on Live and Kicking a million years ago, he said everybody has the entrepreneur in them. The best one, the most successful are the ones who act upon it. He said we've all got it in us.
Love that.
But it's those who act upon it. That is the voice of Tessa Coates. She's here with me, as well as her lovely partner, Stevie Martin. Now, I am hugely excited to introduce two fantastic women who between them hold the titles of writers.
Yes, correct. We didn't know what you wanted from us moment.
At that moment, just a sort of a
confirmation.
It's a bit like when you're in America and you say something to the waitress and she just goes,
Okay, great. Coming up.
Yeah.
Great.
I'm like, I'm sorry, my darling. Is that affirmation, confirmation or denial? Because you just made a noise. Okay, fine.
We'll give that for you.
Thank you. If I could try that. Okay, so writers. Journalists. Performers. Formerly worked in McDonald's. Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Did you really?
Yeah. But I worked there for 1 month and a woman came in and threw up all over the bathroom and then they said, you have to clean it up. And I was like, I have to leave. And then I just left.
But there could have been one of those gold star badges for that.
I don't care. I don't want one.
I always wanted to work in McDonald's.
Oh, you don't?
No, I did because the till looked so cool because it was all flat. And I was just like, that's amazing.
Because it was touch...
Yeah, it was like early touch technology.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I really wanted to work in Mackie D's.
The tills were very satisfying, I will say that. And the free meals were really good as well.
And what about the fry machine? Because again...
What were you allowed to touch?
I wasn't allowed.
You never got to the fries.
No. I was very much like tills and that was it.
And toilets.
Oh, I could do a McFlurry.
Could you?
And always put in an extra like zhuzh of topping.
That shows how young you are.
Yes.
That you worked at McDonald's and McFlurries have been invented. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to your list of things.
Okay.
Sorry, I forgot. I digressed. Performers.
Yes.
Actors.
Mm-hmm.
Comedians.
Mm-hmm.
And podcasters.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yep. Together they host the hilarious podcast Nobody Panic about fully functioning as an adult without screaming all the time. And alongside Liz Kingsman, form acclaimed comedy trio Massive Dad.
That's us.
Correct.
Please welcome
we got it all in.
Tessa Coates and Stevie Martin.
Woo! Clapping myself.
Yeah, meet Simon.
Hello, Simon.
Hello.
Lovely to meet you.
And nice to meet you too.
Simon, have you ever worked in a fast food chain?
I've never worked in a fast food chain. I've worked in a lot of bars in my time, though, and pubs.
I've never worked in a chain, but I have worked very fast in the Pit Stop Cafe at Silverstone for the engineers and mechanics who would come in at the 5 a.m. shift.
Wow.
And I worked there, I did not work there for very long. I was very bad at it. And once I remember looking at the clock and thinking, okay, how long do I think I've been here? I think it's 4 hours. And I looked at the clock, it had been 17 minutes. And then I'm like, this is awful in here.
I used to really hate that about boring jobs. The clock watching thing. I'm not going to look at the clock
yet. Don't look at the clock.
I'm not going to look at the clock yet. I'm not going to look at the clock yet until I think it's been at least a couple of hours. And then, oh, I had to miss one of the England games in Euro 96 because I was working in BHS.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
That's really sad.
I know. You must have been heartbroken when they closed.
Yeah, really devastated.
But would they have been financially secure like the banks are with our money? Hello! Did we all see that transition? I went from BHS into the FSCS. Ladies, that's why I'm sitting in this chair. So, Simon, tell me.
You would have been protected if you had up to £85,000 in your bank account. That's the amount you've got protected. It doubles up for a joint account. So if you were sharing your account with someone else, it would be £170,000 per individually licensed bank. Any money above that, you're not protected.
When you say protected, what do you mean?
Hello.
Sorry,
sister.
Captain, can I ask a question or no?
I'll ask a question.
Okay, sorry.
Okay.
When you say protected... Go on then, you can ask the question.
No, go on. When you say protected, what do you mean?
There's a man standing there, guarding it.
Shirtless.
No, what it means is that if your bank went bust, there were times when we thought some very, very big banks could go bust. What happens then is if your bank goes bust, the Financial Services Compensation Scheme will step in and they will make sure that you get your savings back as long as it's below that £85,000 amount. So say, imagine you had £20,000 in the bank. And your bank goes bust because it's been running
zero.
Its business very, very badly.
Okay.
Then the Financial Services Compensation Scheme will step in. You'll get your £20,000 back. And you can go put it in a bank that isn't...
That won't go bust. Or just in a box under your bed, because that's the one thing you know won't go bust.
No, boxes under your bed and
illegal.
Not protected.
Look, you two have an amazing career. I haven't got that many things that I do in my job that you two do as your job. Is there a typical day?
No.
I mean, well, you say not typical. You're about to fly into the jungle.
Yes, I know. But at the time of this going out, I may well be back from the jungle.
Certainly.
So let's not make any reference to the jungle.
Understood. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. Don't worry.
No.
But by the way, I am going to the jungle if they decide to keep this in.
No, there's no sort of typical day. The podcast comes out every Tuesday and everyone always says, why aren't you recording? If they see you on a Tuesday and you're like, we record it in advance.
It's not live.
It's not live.
It's terrible.
Yeah. So people are always very stressed about that. We record them well in advance, but there's no typical day. This week, we've both done some voiceover work. I did some writing for somebody.
Signed an NDA. A lot of NDAs get signed.
So much NDAs.
Oh.
No, I was. I did some staff writing for a TV show. I did some podcasting. But no, there's a distinct lack of routine to the regular day.
You like that?
Oh, exactly the same. Yeah, but I do a lot of like branded content because that's where the hot bunts is. I've done some voiceovers. Doing a voiceover today. Doing some editing for somebody, some sound editing. Yeah, I wrote an article for a magazine as well. So, it just depends.
You must both have lots of different revenue streams.
Oh, yes. A lot.
Yes.
So how easy is it for you to, A, keep track of your money and making sure the invoice is sent and you got the money in, and then knowing what to do with that money?
What do you mean, what to do with it?
Do you save it, spend it?
Buy a pleather hat.
What do you mean reinvest it in what?
Pop it into an ISA?
No, or buying a new MacBook to edit
reinvest. That just means buying things.
Yeah.
Right.
Pretty much. No, buying things for your own business of being you.
I consider that anything is my business. So, yes, all my things are just me buying things for the business.
Okay. But obviously you've been earning from an early age, you said.
Yes.
So you earned money from an early age. Have you always been good with your money?
I've been a bit... A Smaug the dragon about it. So, and please do correct me on the pronunciation of that.
Yeah, is it Smaug or Smaug or Smoog?
Smoog. He's the dragon from The Hobbit.
I've not seen it.
It's not Peter's best work.
The dragon bit's great, though.
Yes. Benedict Cumberbatch plays the dragon.
Oh, does he?
Yes.
Okay.
Didn't recognise him.
Well, we're all learning.
There we are, exactly.
My whole life, I've been really being into being Smaug. So yeah. I would always put most of my money into savings, never really touch it, live on very, very little, have this large Smaug pile. Yeah. And then I would occasionally, once a year, blow it on... The last time I blew it was going to a wedding in Australia.
Oh, lovely.
And I went to even the Witter workshop in New Zealand.
Yes.
And I'd completely run out of money, and I bought myself one gold coin from the film that was like a dwarf coin, literally the stuff that Smaug the dragon has sat on. Yeah, so I had no actual money left, but I did have one gold coin. So I used to be quite good about saving things, because it's quite easy to be good at saving when you're a kid, because it just goes in the piggy bank.
Yeah.
You don't actually have any bills or anything to, you know, you're not responsible for when stuff breaks, and then you get to be a grown-up and you're just like, oh, I'm just bleeding money.
Yeah, you spend it on things that aren't exciting anymore. It's very rare that I'll buy something that I'm like, I'll spend my money on something that I'm like, oh, that was worth it. So it's like, well, what's that percentage?
You just get home and then there's like a letter saying you owe £300 for gas. And you're like, oh,
great.
Okay then.
There's always a letter for £300 for gas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody always wants your money.
Somebody wants your money, and it's much, much harder to be on it, I think.
I'm very bad at predicting what my bills will be.
Oh, yes.
It's always like a real lottery. And it's one that I often underestimate.
Certainly.
I think about £2.50 for my wind. I have to pay for wind around my apartment.
Absolutely.
Because I live in London.
Simon, when you do have lots of different revenue streams, it really is important to keep track of what you're doing, because, you know, there are taxes and things that need to be accounted for, aren't there?
Yeah, there are. I mean, obviously, there's tax to begin with.
What? What's that?
Oh, no.
Oh, this is going to be a very long podcast.
I'm screwed.
Presumably, when you get your money in, you put something somewhere to pay the tax bills.
Yes, or do you just, I have a tax account.
Let the tax come up and go, uh-oh.
No, yeah. I can't do that. Otherwise, I cry.
When I very first started freelancing at a magazine, you know, we got your paycheck, and I lost my mind. Like, we were making £100 a day, and I'd been previously never made, you know. I couldn't believe that somebody wanted me to write things down, and they were going to give me £100 a day. And then this was the first time someone explained to me, like, also, by the way, 20% of that is going to go. And I was like,
to who?
Where?
What?
Who will take it?
I'll have a word with them.
No,
they'll be fine.
They don't need it. I'll hold on to it. And they were like, no, I'm serious. You need to put 20% of that of your paycheck into a different account every month or every time you get one, which is absolutely mind-blowing information to me.
But really good advice, Simon.
It is really good advice, because definitely don't keep it in the same account that you do all your normal spending from.
No.
Whether that's spending on the inevitable £300 gas bill that's always there when you come home, or the hat that you want to buy.
The hat. I'm just constantly buying the same
but
hat.
But it must be really difficult to budget when you've got money coming in from so many different places.
I found it very hard when I started. I would still work at a magazine, and then I would also freelance as well, because magazine salaries were not good. Shock. But then from quite early on, I have like a little spreadsheet with all the stuff that I knew was coming in, and then like add it up. And then someone just did it for me about in 2013, and I still keep the same one where they did all the kind of codes and stuff, so it adds up automatically because I can't add up, and that was proving to be a problem. So that helps, but then sometimes it does get overwhelming. The best thing I ever did was I got an accountant who specialises in like people with ridiculously lots of, you know, lots of different income streams. And so now at about sort of this time, she'll Skype me and be like, sorry, what's that? And I'll be like, oh yeah, no, I don't know. And then we'll just have a little chat and it's fine.
I mean, you've since been published in Vice, The Guardian, Cosmos, Shortlist, Grazia, to name but a few.
Oh,
was it hard to get into that? Because obviously journalism is a bit like TV presenting. Everyone always thinks, well, it's impossible to get in. It's impossible to get in. What was your route?
I did an MA at City University, which I could not afford. So I'm still paying that back a decade later.
Seriously?
That is genuinely correct.
Wow.
I had to take out a loan, and then that loan is now defunct. So I don't know how. Everyone on my course was posh. Literally everyone, and I'm not. But everyone was like, oh, you have a loan? And I was like, how do you not? Like, it was like £9,000.
Yeah.
And then I graduated being like, well, that's fine, 'cause I'll get a job now. And I didn't get a job in journalism for 18 months. I just sort of wrote for free. And then I was a waitress, and then I did bartending. There was one point where I like saved money by living under a kitchen table, and I paid £400 a month for not having a bed.
And it was still £400 a month?
Yeah,
Who was charging you £400 to live in their kitchen?
Well... Me and my friend decided to share a flat, and then I went to the Edinburgh Festival, and he was like, oh, fine, I'll sort it out. I was like, great. He sent me some pictures. I was like, brilliant. Then I got in, I was like, there's only one bedroom, and we're not that sort of friend. So he was like, it's fine, I'll sleep under the table. And I was like, okay, but that means I'm going to have to in 6 months. And then mine coincided with getting dumped. So there was very much a period of time in my life I'd just been dumped and I was sleeping under a table. It was a very low point.
Was this in London?
Oh, of course
this is
it
a very
was.
London flat,
of
isn't it? Was there not a more appropriate place to sleep in the flat that wasn't the bedroom or under the
no,
table?
No, there was only a bedroom and a kitchen and a bathroom that was the size of, you couldn't close the door when you're on the loo. That was the level of of what I was functioning at. So then I did that for 18 months. And then my friend was going to work on Barack Obama's campaign, as we all have. And she wanted me to house sit for a bit. So I quit waitressing because I knew that that would force me. Because when you're bartending and you're waitressing, people just go, oh, intern in the day. I did that for like 2 weeks at Prima Baby and Pregnancy Magazine. Shout out to them. And I was like falling asleep at my desk. And then I didn't understand how all my friends or lots of my friends were also interning. And it was like, oh, your parents pay your rent. Yeah. I get it. And so it was a real like, oh God, I just quit. And then I started to intern and then I got a job writing content or writing articles for a careers website that's now defunct. And I got paid £14,500 a year. And it was like the like Christmas had come early. I could buy a soup a week.
Sidebar, every runner who works in television now is really posh. Yeah. They all live in London and the only way they can work is to have accommodation for free that their parents pay
of
for.
Of course, but you know, it's fair the only enough. Way. You would if you could, you know.
I spent 2 years just living for free. Anytime somebody was going away to work on Barack Obama's campaign or anytime anyone constant. Was like, I'm going on holiday, I just stayed in their room.
Didn't you live with like an old piano woman?
That was the best one I ever had. Whenever I was coming to the end of it, someone would always be like, oh, do you know so-and-so?
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes it would be in literally a porch, in a freezing porch. Looked like somewhere that someone like kept you as a kidnappee, you know, on a mattress.
And
like,
in episode of 24.
Yeah, and the damp coming in. And I remember having 4 hot water bottles on me. And then I remember, and then when I woke up in the morning, there was ice in this glass of water. And I remember thinking, this is bad. This is really bad. Anyway, then I lived with this amazing woman in a little lovely flat in Pimlico, absolutely beautiful, best place I'll ever live, and lived there for free with her and Cyril, the Dutch concert pianist, and it was the happiest time of my whole life. And honestly, when you've been living like hand to mouth and you live on under the table and suddenly a lovely lady welcomes you in to somewhere warm and safe, it's Christmas.
With that housing story, you're about to get a mortgage, I gather.
Yes.
But you split your time now between London and LA.
No. Oh dear. No.
I mean, that's what it says here.
Does it really?
Yeah.
So I went out to America last year with my show that I wrote at the Edinburgh Fringe. And in an absolutely whirlwind turn of events, it got picked up for a pilot for ABC.
Amazing.
Which is absolutely incredible. You know, mind-blowing thing to happen. And then went out there in the winter of this year with the intention of like writing it and staying out there. And then was like, oh, I can't do this. Came home and just basically stayed at my parents' house. But everybody thinks I just split my time between here and Los Angeles. So now anytime I see anyone, they're like,
how's LA? And you just, but they asked me, yeah. How's Tessa in LA?
Yeah.
Oh, she's in LA now.
She's in LA, of course. And so I go to parties and people are like, are you just here for the weekend? I'm like, I live at my parents' house. It was so bad out there. I had to come back. I thought I would have this sort of Ernest Hemingway experience. I would write my magnus opus.
And in reality, you were In-N-Out Burger on one of the dirty tables.
In-N-Out Burger crying. Every day, trying to write this pilot that I did not know what I was doing, having an absolute nervous breakdown. And also, Ernest Hemingway literally shot himself. So everybody thinks I split my time between here and LA, which is fantastic.
You split your time between London and LA, and I hear you're applying for a mortgage. Which country will you be based in?
Yeah. Pop's here.
Oh, I love...
I think probably here. Yeah. And then I just sort of split my time.
Yeah, oh, great. Lovely.
You know, when I can, I like to get out there. And, you know, no, not at all. But that is true about the mortgage. Because of this ABC contract, you know, I had for the first time in my life this lump of cash. And I thought, well, you know, it seems smart to try and get on the property ladder. You're making a face like...
No, I'm not.
Bad at it.
That's his resting face.
I'm just worried. That's just the way I look. I've got resting concerned face. What I was thinking was that you got the money, presumably to use as a deposit or something, but getting a mortgage when you're in your position...
Yeah, I thought you just say, I've got the cash for the deposit, can I have a mortgage? Managed to rent for the last couple of years while being a freelancer. Like, I haven't gone to jail. I haven't gone bankrupt.
I haven't wanted for much.
I haven't wanted for much. Please, the lady doesn't want for much. Just a little tiny one bed. Please, let the lady have a house. And shouting, let the lady have a house, turns out to not be enough. Even with my American contract, that's not enough. In the UK, you can't use your American money. And so they basically won't let me have one because
America pays you rather than the UK.
Because America pays me rather than the UK.
That's
they
mad.
Say, well, what if you never work again? And I'm like, yes, we're all concerned about that. Anyone could be fired at any point. You know, a person with a salary of £18,000 would be more accepted for a mortgage than I currently am. And I'm like, this is nuts.
But unfortunately, if you'd have been doing this 10 or 12 years ago, pre-financial crisis,
yes,
banks were falling over themselves to hand money to people who couldn't prove that they could pay it back. Things changed.
Did they want to give it to you in the hope that you then couldn't pay it back so they could take your house? Or
no, because they never they don't win on that one. They very rarely win on that
one. When banks, so why were they so...
Because when banks repossess people's houses, they then have to sell them, do them up nicely, and then put them on with the estate agent to try and get the best price. They end up putting them through auction or something like that.
Right.
So they always end up selling for less than they're worth. It's not a profit-making scheme for banks, repossessing people's houses. You'd sell mortgages to people, then you'd take the mortgages that you had issued to people, you would package them up, and then you would sell them to investors. And because people were keen to get the income stream that came from people paying their mortgage back, they would buy these investments. There was basically a worldwide bout of financial madness that then led to the financial crisis.
So that means that Tesla can't get a house.
And then
now
all the banks woke up to it. You need to have those 3 years' worth of accounts.
Yeah.
If you don't have them, it's really, really tough.
And also, they have also said, because last year my accounts showed I made a threepenny shilling.
Yeah.
And... this year it shows a big leap in financing. Up to a farthing. if not three and a farthing. because of this big jump. They're also concerned about the jump, you know, so there's all this...
Oh, so you may be in the mafia.
Exactly.
Or drugs. Said,
why does it, you know, who's to say it won't jump, you know...
No, but they might say it might go back down again.
Exactly. Oh, so they're concerned about my lack of stability.
Yeah, did you not at any stage want to say... in your face, ABC show.
That's how I began the conversation.
And it went nowhere.
And nowhere. Well, because it's not enough, as it turns out. Like, nobody is interested in that. Like, nobody.
Well, I am.
Oh, thank you so
much. What
is
the show going to be called?
The show's called Primates.
Primates on ABC.
Now we have to not discuss this because it's been sold
contract.
From ABC to...
somebody else. But good luck with it anyway, because I feel for you. Because I know what getting a commission from ABC to make a pilot, that is huge. To get commissioned in pilot season from something you sent out, you know, you took them to see is extraordinary. That is massive.
That
really is massive. That is really, really cool. But the thing is, obviously, once you get the money and you are lucky enough to get a mortgage, Simon, the question is, are they protected?
Well, your mortgage itself, I guess you'd like to think that if your bank went bust, you wouldn't owe the mortgage and you'd get your mortgage cleared. But that's not true.
Oh.
Lots of people labour under that delusion, but unfortunately you'd
still
owe the money.
Yeah.
What you are protected for, though, is mortgage advice. So most mortgages nowadays have to be sold with financial advice. And if the person that you used for that financial advice gives you bad advice and you have to make a claim against them... in order, because they've told you to take the wrong mortgage, they've done something that's financially bad for you, they haven't advised you properly. But the problem is, they're such a bad advisor that when you go to claim against them, they've gone bust as well.
Oh, wow, okay.
Well, the money that you would be able to claim from them in compensation for that bad advice, that's protected by the FSCS.
Well, that's good to know.
That is good
to know. Makes sense
because
as well.
It does feel like an absolute minefield.
Yeah, and you can't make any mistakes.
Yeah, you can't make any mistakes. And you don't know who is like a trickster being like, take this path. And who's like, I actually do know and you should go this path, you know?
Mm. I always struggle with, you must take independent financial advice. How do I know to ask you and ask you? Mm. I mean, I'm not going to ask you.
Don't ask me anything.
You slept in a porch. I ain't asking you anything.
They need to be a qualified financial advisor, first of all. I'm not. You know, I'm just a journalist.
You're not.
I'm not a qualified.
He's not even
advisor.
A qualified.
Get
him off this thing.
Fraud.
He's a fraud.
Forget it.
Get him off. He's not really, ladies and gentlemen. He's a very nice man and very, very clever. And he's the editor of, what's it called again?
This is money.
Thisismoney.co.uk.
Indeed. An independent financial advisor is someone who's not tied to a particular company. They can tell you about the products provided by any different company, whereas a restricted financial advisor or a tied financial advisor would be attached to one company or only a number of companies. So they might only tell you about a number of different companies' products. So that's why independent is best, because they're comparing everything for you.
Okay.
I'm going to set up as an independent advisor.
I think you should. You might as well. Honestly, the state of things out there.
Yeah.
But as you've said, your salaries, your earnings are so unpredictable. Do you budget, Stevie? Do you try and foresee that, get a budget together for each year?
Like, I imagine everyone who works in some sort of entertainment industry has this, where you don't often know when they're going to pay you or how much. So often I'll do a voiceover and it'll be like £250. And I'll be like, that's lovely. Or it'll be 15 grand and I won't know until it lands in my bank account. Then I quite unhealthily, I think, say yes to everything and I'm like a money-grabbing Scrooge because I'm just like, more, 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 more. Because then in the moment I'm like, well, I know I've definitely got that. I'll look ahead, for example, last week was completely dead and then in the last week it's now completely rammed. So I can't really tell. The podcast very thankfully pays my rent. Once you've got rent sorted, I think that's like the first thing you're like, fine.
Yeah.
And then everything else, you're like, okay, well, now we're talking soup.
that.
Be hello.
Now we're talking
now
hats.
It could be anything. It could be Super Bowl hats. We don't really have any other dreams.
You know? Simon, how important is budgeting?
It is very important, but it doesn't have to be ridiculously spreadsheety. It can just be sitting down with a piece of paper and going, right, OK, what do I spend my money on? So rent, bills, council tax, all that kind of stuff. Mm. Draw a line underneath it. Roughly how much do I spend on food? Draw a line under that.
Gosh, that's the thing I can't do.
Yeah, and then you can start to work out how much you might have left for other things, such as enjoying yourself or, dare I say it, trying to save some money.
When I moved in to my first home, my first proper paying rent house, there was five of us in the house. We had to draw up exactly how much we could afford to spend on the rent. And my friend Alice, who, you know, had to say, I'm sorry, but this is exactly how much I can afford and no more. And because she was on a proper salary. And so therefore it was like, this is how much comes in every month. This is how much money there is for coffee and snacks and treats and fun. Like, this is the budget. Whereas for me, it's like, I just have to work more.
Yeah, I can offer to do more shifts at the paper.
Whereas if she works, you know, incredibly hard in her job, there's nothing, she can't really come home and then do another job, you know.
So I was just thinking, the Fringe Festival, the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, has been really kind to you both, and it really is like the mecca of comedy. Mm-hmm. What's it like being on stage? Because you're playing to people that really are going to be judgy.
They're often not, you know.
They're really not.
People have paid money to see you on Saturdays. That can be like £12-13 sometimes. They're excited to sort of be there. And often I've found this just, it's actually much nicer than doing like a comedy club in London. Because in London, often with like mixed bill nights and things, they're like, well, who are you? Or what's this? Like being on stage and doing the shows are my favourite part of the Fringe. Everything around it I find very difficult, but like that bit is really often the nice bit, you know.
So is it like doing almost like a little mini startup business project or something?
Do you have to
save up a lump sum to do that, for example, and then invest it into it?
Because if you go, you know, you're seeing all these shows, the shows like Stevie's saying are costing like £9-12 a ticket. You're maybe playing 100 people to a room. A bit of maths is like, oh, £1 million a show. Then the drinks are wildly expensive. There seems to be so many people there. So as a punter, you go and you're like, oh my God, you must be making so much money. You've done this sold out show for 30 days, whatever. Whereas really the only people in that whole city who aren't making any money are the performers, because rent is extortionate, because landlords up there know they can charge £1,000.
So that's the rent for just staying somewhere.
So, yeah, just like your rent to
sleeping
stay.
Somewhere.
Then you pay your deposit on your venue up front. Then you have to pay to be in the guide at like £500. Then you pay in the smaller guide, £300. These are compulsory fees. Then you're paying for your posters and your flyers and all of this stuff.
And then the venue takes a cut of your ticket sales, which is.
And so it doesn't come back to you until the end of October, November. And so you might break even if you had a good run, but you still need to have access to like £5,000 in the middle of the year.
It's pricing a lot of people out now. Even the free Fringe, you have to have minimum 4,000.
So it's not free.
It's free for the audiences. So the audiences have a lovely time, and then the performers like, please. And then now as well, they normally have like buckets at the end, but now people don't have change anymore. It's now boop.
I saw a busker. With a credit card thing.
Very good.
It's the future. Feels it's weird, though,
doesn't it? Yeah, he's a tap here, £2. Yeah. And I just thought, wow.
Yeah.
But then you're right, maybe that is the way of the world. That's what has to happen. Well, the way of the world is such that we have to stop talking to you. I want to listen to your podcast, though. What's it called?
It's called Nobody Panic.
Nobody Panic.
And it comes out every Tuesday.
Every Tuesday, correct.
When I see you in the street on a Wednesday, I have to say to you, oh my gosh, you're not in LA.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you could, every time you see
like
me.
Perfect. What's next for you guys? I hate that question, by the way, when people ask me that question.
Yeah.
I often just say, going home.
Yeah, well, we're going home. I'm submitting a picture of the moon to an art exhibition, so big day for us both.
Oh my God, huge.
Sorry, you're submitting a picture of the moon. Do you paint?
No, not at all.
It's a photograph of the moon.
No, I painted it.
Oh, there it is.
It's a comedian.
Is that the right way around?
No, but it's fine. A comedian's art exhibition, an amazing comedian called Annie McGrath put on this art exhibition of comedians. It was a sort of give it a go, submit a piece of art. It was all for charity. So I'm going to drop off my moon painting.
And then I'm going to buy it.
She's going to buy it.
With the money you make from the voiceover.
Thank you.
Please don't leave it at the exhibition, the only one that's not sold. And we've got some exciting plans for the podcast in the new year. I'm thinking of going back to the Edinburgh Festival.
I won't, but I might go to Tokyo 2020 to watch Not Compete.
Right, okay. But it is the second most expensive city in the world.
I bet.
Oh, God, right. Well, I better budget.
On that note, I would like to say thank you to you both. It's been a pleasure to meet you.
It's been an absolute joy meeting you and Simon, the money man.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Making the Money Work, brought to you by the Financial Services Compensation Scheme and This Is Money.